First of all, I think at the beginning, it has to be defined the kind of document we were drafting. At the end, we realized that it was not a theological document, but a more or less a very practical code of conduct. And so after that, we had problems with our theological traditions. We had problems in formulating concepts which have to be agreed by all the religious partners. So it was not very, very easy. But it has been a kind of pilgrimage, and I think everybody now is very pleased with the baby.
So a significant achievement. What are the most important points, do you feel? What is the most important area of agreement here?
Well, I think what is important that we are in a plurireligious world, Christians realize there are many things in common. More than points that divide us, there are very common points. And this is very important that religions, and especially Christianity, appears like not a source of division, but a source of solidarity and spiritual communion. Because when believers are around the table and they share their views, they try to understand each other, I think that it is a great service they give to society because it shows that it is possible to live diversity in unity.
So would you say the document is aimed at parish level, at religious leadership, or at governments also, talking about the need for religious freedom?
Government, I hope, but surely we have to emphasise the importance that these principles be known and applied at the grassroots level of our community.
If you're talking about countries where religious conflicts are very common, how easy do you think it is to implement the principles of this document?
First of all, when we are in a country where there is a persecution against Christians, of course, it's very difficult to implement all the principles that are written there, but at least some of them, like human solidarity, like freedom of cult, at least of worship, at least. But what is important to always realize that interreligious dialogue is not dialogue between religions; it's dialogue between believers. So it's a very concrete activity, and of course, the problem also are very. Very concrete. For example, the situation in India is not the same as in Africa or in London. So what is important is that all the partners who have drafted this text are committed to proclaim the word of God, and witnessing to the world is essential for every Christian. So it is necessary to do that according, of course, the principles of the gospel. We are not going to, it's not a campaign of aggression, an aggressive campaign. No, it's, on the contrary, a kind of meditation and a code of conduct. It means a program for tomorrow.
There are those, though, who still see a significant tension within the Catholic Church between being open to the experience of others, respecting other religious traditions, and remaining true to the missionary call of the gospel.
Well, I think this is because they don't know exactly what is interreligious dialogue, because the first condition of success in interreligious dialogue is to proclaim, to affirm his own faith. That is, you cannot build up interreligious dialogue on ambiguity. So the partners must have a very clear-cut idea of what is their faith. And it is what I say so many times, that when you practice interreligious dialogue, you are obliged to deepen your own faith. Otherwise, it has no sense. For example, if you look at the encyclical of John Paul II on mission called Redemptoris Missio, interreligious dialogue is enshrined in the missionary task of the Church. So it means when you practice interreligious dialogue, you proclaim your own faith. You don't impose it, but you propose it.
In one of the principles, you also talk about Christians involved in situations of interreligious violence. Can you tell us anything about specific countries, specific contexts at all?
Well, not, but as regards Christians involved in violence in Northern Ireland, in Europe, for example, it's an example which is very obvious. But actually, I think the Christians are much more victims than promoters of the violence.
In Principle 4, you also talk about Christians should refrain from any kind of financial incentives, in other words, offering services or charity in return for conversions. How much of a problem is this?
Well, as regards the Catholic Church, I don't think this is a great problem, but I think for the, our partners it is a problem. As you know, we don't. This is not our tradition, at least.
What do you hope, then, will be the reaction to this document? Do you think it can be a very practical tool for interreligious dialogue today?
Well, it depends of the bishops now and the parish priest. And, of course, we have to do a great effort in order to make it easily attainable for the parishes and schools and Catholic universities and so on. The problem is we have so many beautiful texts, but the problem is how to implement. It's like in the United Nations, you have many, many declarations, provisions, but at the end, people do what they like.
I think this is a common understanding that has grown for a while, many churches, but also in these national bodies like ours, that many of the challenges we now have in how we relate to people of other faith, how we do our mission, how do we present our Christian witness, how do we present the gospel so that it is presented with a Christian attitude as well, and not only with the words. My experience as well from Norway was that we actually started a project like this there as well with other religious partners, actually, to discuss this also from another perspective, namely how do all kinds of religions who want to present their faith do it with a proper respect for the other and with moral standards that can also have some kind of universal character. And I think what we now do here in this document is to present this particularly from the values of the Christian tradition. I think it really corresponds to many of the common values of many religious traditions.
It's true that it took you 5 years, though, to draw it up, to find something that was acceptable to most people around the table. Would you say that all the partners are now happy with the current statement?
Yeah, as far as I know, we have now developed a level of common understanding, a level of having a text together with precise and, I would say, challenging elements for all of us. But as a common standard for how we think this should be given as recommendations to those who are involved in mission.
What do you see as the most important challenges? You're talking about a challenging document for all concerned.
Well, I think it is quite a challenge for us to present the Christian message in a time when all churches, wherever they are in the world, face an interfaith reality. So I think for many churches it is a way to discover the reality of the other religions, not only as something foreign or something far away, but something we have in our own context. Secondly, I think challenges we face in these themes and addressing these themes is how we make our Christian witness credible, in the sense that it is an integrated way of presenting our Christian faith, so that also the love and the respect for others and human dignity of everybody, whether they are Christians or not, come as a clear message also, not only in what we say, but also how we say it and how we present it. And I think that is a challenge that is following a Christian witness through the ages, but I think it becomes even more challenging now in a globalized world with strong presence of other faiths.
It's particularly challenging, isn't it, for those countries where there are many situations of interreligious violence and conflict. How do you think this document can in any way help in those particularly difficult contexts?
Well, I just came back from Beirut morning from visiting some of the member churches we have there and other partners. I think, for example, in the Middle East context, the churches have a very strong experience of how to be church in a multi-religious context, how to do the mission of the church such a way so that it over time build this credibility of the church, being reliable, promoting the values of justice and peace, part of the Christian message, but also giving dignity to every human being, as Christ has called us follow the great commandment of loving your neighbor as yourself, as basic Christian attitude wherever we are. We have to realize that in areas like the Middle East, particularly the issue of mission, a challenging issue, as many other actors have both come to the region and doing mission in other ways, ways they are used to do it in other parts of the world. I think that has caused some tensions. I think we should be quite open and transparent about that. I hope that this document can really express our common values when we want, as Christians, send our message, like in the context of the Middle East.
So it's really an attempt to stop any kind of aggressive proselytizing or forced conversions, really, isn't it?
Certainly, and without saying that we should not send gospel to everybody as a good message to everybody, but really to, as you say, to stop an inappropriate way of doing it, aggressive, provoking, and also to avoid that we don't do it in an ecumenical way, not being part of a fellowship with the local churches where we are working. And I think that is one of the great issues which we need to address together now, how our Christian witness must be our common witness.
Are there any particular countries that you looked at that are of special concern to you regarding these difficulties, these challenges?
Well, I, as far as I know, the Middle East has been one of those regions where several churches have brought these issues to us, the World Council of Churches. I know also that there have been several discussions about mission and evangelism in former Eastern Europe reality and as the Iron Curtain was disappearing and many countries were then opened again for mission and for a Christian witness, and that it has become a problem for the present churches who have been there for years and for centuries, how to deal with what they find as also proselytizing from their own flocks. I think those questions we are dealing with here are not only relevant between Christian churches and other groups of other faiths. It's also a matter of other as Christian churches.
Have you had consultation on this with members of other faiths?
As I say, I have from my background had it. I think those who have been involved in this process are those who are really almost day-to-day dealing with institutions and people of other faiths. So I think this reflects quite a lot of these sections which have been going on for years.
The document contains many excellent principles. The challenge, of course, is how to implement these, especially in situations like, for example, the Middle East or other areas where Christians are persecuted, for example. How can you do this, do you think?
I think we now need to reflect on exactly how this can be recommendations relevant for concrete situations. I mean, this has become a document that has a kind of global character. The great challenge is bring it back also then to every relevant and concrete situation where these questions need to be addressed. I hope that this document really can foster that will happen in different contexts, and that we as World Council of Churches can nurture that to happen, but also that the National Council of Churches, for example, and also interfaith institutions in many countries can use this as a proper platform for exactly those discussions.